The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Good morning, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, one and all. This is Richard Martin with the Wake Up Call coming to you on this Friday, the 8th of April, 2011. And I wanted to start today with a word about something which is very close to my heart, and that is, of course, the quality of life in the United States. Now, as you know, my brief here is economics and financial affairs as pertain to you, my listeners. And some time ago, I also added to that bailiwick information that I felt was important to you in terms of what I would describe as my justification for leaving the country and taking up residence elsewhere. Now, what I have to relate to you here should send shivers of fear up and down your spines. This is not Looney Tune ravings. This is fully justified and referenced information as to the way things are in the U.S. and, more importantly, the direction in which things are going for the future. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would ask you to listen very carefully to this as I fully suspect that it's all part and parcel of the fascist state that is slowly and inexorably being set up within the country. And you simply cannot afford to remain ignorant about these things. Now, you may remember a few weeks ago, a Bernard von Nothaus, purveyor of the gold and silver-backed Liberty Dollar, was convicted on numerous charges, including making, possessing, and selling his own coins, as well as conspiracy against the United States. Well, Western District of North Carolina U.S. Attorney Ann Tompkins issued a Department of Justice press release that, quite frankly, should raise blaring high-decibel sirens across the entire union, and I quote, "Attempts to undermine the legitimate currency of this country are simply a unique form of domestic terrorism." Words spoken by U.S. Attorney Tompkins announcing the verdict, and I continue. "While these forms of anti-government activities do not involve violence, they are every bit as insidious and represent a clear and present danger to the economic stability of this country. We are determined to meet these threats through infiltration, disruption, and dismantling of organizations which seek to challenge the legitimacy of our democratic form of government." End of quote. Well, this poor guy, all he did was put out a few coins and called them currency. You really might wonder if he was, you know, sent by the right wing of, right arm of Al-Qaeda, but anyway, the definitions for what is or is not a terrorist are ambiguous as defined by the Patriot Act, and have, of course, been progressively, hastily, and secretively expanded over the course of the last decade. The so-called terrorist, it seems, is now anyone who actively engages in an activity, whether it's violent, peaceful, public, or private, perceived, I repeat, perceived, to threaten the legitimacy and or the stability of the U.S. government. An 18-year veteran of law enforcement recently published an article at James Rawls' survival blog detailing how perceptions in law enforcement are being molded to fit the new paradigm. The use of the term terrorist to describe a wide variety of crimes and, more alarmingly, the passive behavior of those who intend to do no harm to the government or the public is being injected into the broader consciousness and everyday semantics of the American people. During the past several years, there has been a dramatic shift in the focus of law enforcement training. Law enforcement courses have moved away from a local community focus to a federally dominated model of complete social control. Most training over the past 2 years has been sponsored by the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, namely the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, and the Federal Emergency Management Committee, or agency, FEMA. No matter what topic the training session concerns, every DHS-sponsored course over the past few years never fails to branch off into warnings about potential domestic terrorists in the community. While this may sound like a valid officer and community safety issue, you may be disturbed to learn how the federal government describes a typical domestic terrorist. These federal trainers describe the dangers of extremists and militia groups roaming the community and hiding in plain sight, ready to attack. Officers are instructed on how to recognize these domestic terrorists by their behavior, views, and common characteristics. State databases are kept to track suspected domestic terrorists, and officers are instructed on reporting procedures to state and federal agencies. Many states now have what is known as a fusion center that compiles a watch list of suspicious people. So how does a person qualify as a potential domestic terrorist? Well, here are characteristics that qualify. Expressions of libertarian philosophies, as evidenced by statements and bumper stickers. Second Amendment-oriented views, NRA or gun club membership, holding a CCW permit. Survivalist literature, fictional books such as Patriots and One Second After are mentioned by name. Self-sufficiency, stockpiling food, ammo, hand tools, medical supplies. Fear of economic collapse, buying gold and barter items. Religious views concerning the Book of Revelation, Apocalypse, Antichrist. Expressed fears of Big Brother or Big Government. Homeschooling. Declarations of constitutional rights and civil liberties. Belief in a New World Order conspiracy. You know, reading this law enforcement officer's account may seem like conjecture, considering that you're supposed to be living in America, historically the last bastion of freedom in the world. But this isn't conjecture, ladies and gentlemen, nor are these the ravings of a disgruntled law enforcement officer. Take, for example, the now infamous MIAC report from the Missouri Information Analysis Center, which is responsible for collecting incident reports of suspicious activity and analyzing those incidents to build profiles of potential terrorists and terrorist activity. The MIAC report specifically describes supporters of presidential candidates Ron Paul, Chuck Baldwin, and Bob Barr as militia-influenced terrorists and instructs the Missouri police to be on the lookout for supporters displaying bumper stickers and other paraphernalia associated with the Constitutional Campaign for Liberty and libertarian parties. Police are educated in the document that people are anti-abortion, owned gold, displayed an assortment of U.S. flags, or even those that talk about the film Zeitgeist, view the police as their enemy and conflates them with domestic terrorists like Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh, Olympic bomber Eric Rudolph, and other domestic militia groups who have been charged with plotting terrorist attacks. Across the entire United States, similar reports are being disseminated to law enforcement, and as incidents of domestic terrorism become more broadly prosecuted, reported, and the terminology is further entranced into the daily vocabulary, more people will find themselves the target of probes, investigations, and on terrorist watch lists, no fly lists, and no work lists. Given the direction things are going and the sheer scope of the tentacles of the ever-growing police state, it's only a matter of time before everyone, regardless of lifestyle choice, preferred reading genre, political leaning, religious conviction, shopping behavior, hobbies and interests, will qualify as a domestic terrorist. Be advised, you are now a person of interest. Well, frankly, ladies and gentlemen, if that doesn't scare you, I give up. This is truly what is in store for you as Americans living in America. And as I come with these things from time to time, and you reflect on my advice to leave the country, remember, this is all something that I have predicted from way back, and it's all part and parcel of the entire collection of atrocities and outrages that pass for American politics today. And I assure you, they're coming to visit you in the not far distant future. So be advised, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so quickly my information. My name is Richard Martin. This is the wake-up call. If you would like to call into the show, which I hope you will, it is possible via a toll-free number at 888-874-4888. Once more, our toll-free number to the show is 888-874-4888. And if you will call in, our engineer is ready to take your calls. He will then let me know via instant message that you're on the line, and then I will take your call and we will discuss your concerns or your questions or your rants or other information. If you would like to send all that by email, you are very welcome to do so. You would be advised to send it to my email address, which is rm@gfawd.com. That's RM for Richard Martin at GFAWD, which stands for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design, GFAWD.com. Once more, the email address, rm@gfawd.com. And then finally, if you would like to call me privately with your personal budgetary and financial or economic concerns, please feel free to call me anytime on a 24-hour basis, because as I think you know, Singapore is halfway around the world, therefore your day is my night and vice versa. In fact, I am exactly 12 hours ahead of you, which means that our time is identical, except that for one of us it's a.m. and for the other it's p.m. So don't feel constrained to call any time. You can leave a message, your phone number and a name, and I will call you back if I am not available. And the number to call is 941-441-1682. Again, that's 941-441-1682. All right, well, I already have some emails, so let's open them up and see what comes in. I got an email from Laura, who says, Richard, hi, Matt, are you listening to this? I think this one is for you. The sound came back at 7 minutes past the hour, so we missed the first 6 to 7 minutes of your show. I'm sorry to hear that, Laura. This is most unfortunate. If this is actually the same for everybody, I will, I get a message from Lou, who says you're online now, so that's good to know. Laura wrote me another email saying, no sound on the broadcast. And so, let me see, what else do we have? We have Lou, who says, not getting any audio today. Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. I think what I'm going to do, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you the whole of my introductory talk once again. It is so important and so serious that I don't want you to miss this. So, Matt, unless you have any reason to suppose that other people have in fact heard the first few minutes of this show, I'm going to sort of start again as though nobody had heard anything at all. So here goes. We are starting the show from scratch, as it were. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, my brief here is economics on the show and financial affairs as pertain to you, my listeners. And some time ago, I also added to that bailiwick information that I felt was important to you in terms of my justification for leaving the country and taking up residence elsewhere. Now, what I have to relate here should, frankly, send shivers of fear up and down your spines. Now, this is not Looney Tune ravings. This is fully justified and referenced information as to the way things are in the U.S., and more importantly, the direction in which things are going for the future. So please listen very carefully to this, as I fully suspect that it is all part and parcel of the fascist state that is slowly and inexorably being set up within the country. And quite frankly, you cannot afford to remain ignorant about these things. You're not going to hear them on the mainstream press, and you're not going to hear them bandied about practically anywhere. But you may remember a few weeks ago, a certain Bernard von Nothaus, a what you might call purveyor of the gold and silver Liberty dollar, his own pet homemade currency, was convicted on numerous charges, including making, possessing, and selling his own coins, as well as conspiracy against the United States. Western District of North Carolina, U.S., U.S. Attorney Ann Tompkins, issued a Department of Justice press release that should raise blaring high decibel sirens across the entire Union, and I quote, attempts to undermine the legitimate currency of this country are simply a unique form of domestic terrorism. Those are words spoken by U.S. Attorney Tompkins announcing the verdict, and I continue. While these forms of anti-government activities do not involve violence, they are every bit as insidious and represent a clear and present danger to the economic stability of this country. We are determined to meet these threats through infiltration, disruption, and dismantling of organizations which seek to challenge the legitimacy of our democratic form of government. End of quote. Well, the definitions for what is or is not a terrorist are ambiguous as defined by the Patriot Act, and have, therefore, of course, been progressively, hastily, and secretively expanded over the course of the last decade. A terrorist, it seems, is now anyone who actively engages in an activity, whether it's violent, peaceful, public, or private, perceived, and I repeat, perceived, to threaten the legitimacy and or stability of the government. An 18-year veteran of law enforcement recently published an article at James Rawls' survival blog detailing how perceptions in law enforcement are being molded to fit the new paradigm. The use of the term terrorist to describe a wide variety of crimes and, more alarmingly, the passive behavior of those who intend to do no harm to the government or the public, is being injected into the broader consciousness and everyday semantics of the American people. During the past several years, there has been a dramatic shift in the focus of law enforcement training. law enforcement courses have moved away from a local community focus to a federally dominated model of complete social control. Most training over the past 2 years has been sponsored by Department of Homeland Security, the dreaded DHS, namely the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, and Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. No matter what topic the training session concerns, every DHS-sponsored course over the past few years never fails to branch off into warnings about potential domestic terrorists in the community. While this may sound like a valid officer and community safety issue, you may be disturbed to learn how our federal government describes a typical domestic terrorist. These federal trainers describe the dangers of extremists and militia groups roaming the community and hiding in plain sight, ready to attack. Officers are instructed how to recognize these domestic terrorists by their behavior, views, and common characteristics. State databases are kept to track suspected domestic terrorists, and officers are instructed on reporting procedures to state and federal agencies. Many states now have what is known as a fusion center that compiles a watch list of suspicious people. So how does a person qualify as a potential domestic terrorist? Based on the training I have attended, here are characteristics that qualify. Expressions of libertarian philosophies, statements and bumper stickers, Second Amendment-oriented views, NRA or gun club membership, holding a CCW permit, survivalist literature, fictional books such as Patriots and One Second After are mentioned by name, self-sufficiency, stockpiling food, ammo, hand tools, medical supplies, fear of an economic collapse, buying gold and barter items, religious views concerning the Book of Revelation, Apocalypse, Antichrist, expressed fears of Big Brother or Big Government, homeschooling, declarations of constitutional rights and civil liberties, belief in a New World Order conspiracy. Reading this law enforcement officer's account may seem like conjecture, considering that we're supposed to be living in America, historically that last bastion of freedom in the world. But this isn't conjecture, ladies and gentlemen, nor are these the ravings of a disgruntled law enforcement officer. Well, there you are. I guess we probably come to the point at which most of you were able to join the show. Very, very scary indeed. I'm sure a lot of you consider that by that definition you're already branded as a domestic terrorist, and whether the solution is prison or another country, I don't know, but this is exactly the sort of thing that I suspected would happen when the Department of the Homeland Security was introduced in 2001. I knew right away that what was originally conceived as a measure of protection for the people would little by little gradually turn on itself and become like a cancerous decision-making engine by the forces of law and order, steamrolling you down into little pockets of defined labels, putting you into a position of being this or that, and finally, not unlike the Japanese Americans at the beginning of World War II, interned just because they were considered Japanese Americans and therefore inimical to the interests of the country. It's coming, ladies and gentlemen, I guarantee it. It's on its way as the economic situation unravels and people become more and more disgruntled and they start to complain and make a fuss and trouble. All these things that this particular person has mentioned will come to the fore. They have all been stated openly, and you will, just because you happen to stockpile food or buy gold or read books like Patriots and One Second After, you will be branded. And this is how the fascist state takes over. And it's coming, you know, to a community near you. It is very, very frightening. And as I said, and I'm sure most of you heard me say this, the point will come, the turning point, the point of no return will come where you won't be able to leave the country. It will be too late. And that's why it seems to me that, you know, there is no solution involved in going to live in some godforsaken corner of North Dakota, you know, or Alaska. Your only option, if you really want to get away from this, is to leave. But, you know, as time goes by, we'll discuss this. I've said we'd all discuss this before. Here is a discussion of what I promised you we would discuss, and we'll have much, much, much more of it as time goes by. All right, well, very shortly, we are going to take our break. But before that, I wanted just to mention a quick word about the unemployment figures from last week, last Friday, because I did mention them briefly in either Friday's or Monday's show. I can't remember which. But I think I'd like to just very quickly run down those figures again just to show you how you're being fooled and tricked yet again by the mainstream media. Because you were told that there were 216,000 new jobs created during the month of March. Now, what you were not told was that 290,000 part-time jobs were created and 80,000 full-time jobs were lost. Yes, they were lost. The full-time jobs were lost. And almost all of the jobs that were created were part-time jobs overall on aggregate. So you can see immediately the gross distortion when you're told about these new jobs. Now, let's have a further look. 117,000 of those 216,000 new jobs were in fact nothing more than the fantasy, make-believe, assumed jobs from what is called the birth-death model, which is basically the assumption by the government about new businesses which have either been created or been disbanded. And they are always optimistic and exaggerated on the positive side, except for 1 month a year, usually January, when they make a huge adjustment and put the job situation back into its proper perspective. So out of those 216,000 new jobs, which as we agreed were part-time jobs, 117,000 were fictitious jobs. They were actually fictitious jobs. Of those jobs, all of them were service sector jobs, so actually what you come up with in the end is 29,000 temporary jobs, which of course, as usual, were lower paying. The higher paying jobs have been lost. It is just the lower paying jobs that are coming into focus right now. Out of those 29,000 were temporary jobs, so that the total jobs, basically, that were real jobs, comes to about 70,000 jobs from, you know, the 216,000 you were told about. Now, don't forget that also so many people are looking, have been looking for more than 6 months. So you've had enormous numbers of people falling off the rolls who are not included in the unemployment statistics at all. So actually, the unemployment rate, which was said to be 8.8, is of course much, much higher than that, much higher. And the scandal, of course, is that this nonsense, these lies, you know, are allowed to persist, you know, month in, month out, year in, year out. And of course, they have nothing to do with the kind of employment statistics that were given even back in the 60s and 70s. This whole new idea of U3 employment, where they deliberately mess with the figures, is actually quite a new phenomenon. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen, this is what it's all about, this is what we have to deal with. It's a scandal, but of course, you know, if you come to the wake-up call, I will try to sort it all out for you and let you know where we stand. And in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, let us go to our break, and I will be right back. The 60s and 70s, this whole new idea of...
You are listening to A Progressive Moment on the Progressive Radio Network.
Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
Driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at progressiveradionetwork.com.
You're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
Hello, I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and you can hear my program, If You Love This Planet, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Sunday at 3 p.m. Please join me as I interview a huge variety of special guests from around the world about a range of topics, including the health of the planet and prescriptions for survival. So, if you do love this planet, tune in to the Progressive Radio Network every Sunday at 3 p.m.
To Cities Grace Notes, where we'll be bringing you inspired voices from around the world, creative voices from various fields and backgrounds, new sounds, new music, and new ideas with your host, CD, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. And I just got a very, very interesting email from Andy Celsius, who, and I would like you to write down a website. So grab yourself a pen. The name of the website is expatinterviews.com. And that's www.expatinterviews.com. And Andy has pasted the description of the site. It says, "We interview people who are living abroad. Here you will find the thoughts and observations of expats living in countries like Thailand, Philippines, Holland, India, Australia, and a lot more. We find that it's always exciting to know about what motivated people to live in another part of the world, how they generate their income, how they manage to live there, and what they've learned from their experiences in a land that's become their new home. Living in another country might seem to be an easy thing to do, but in fact, many expats went through a lot of trial and error. If you are considering an international move yourself, as I know all of my listeners at the wake-up call are, Let expatinterviews.com show you examples of real people who have done it successfully. Learn how they did it, how they managed to survive the difficulties of moving to another country, and how they are happily living their life's dream. You too could make such dreams possible. This site will be one of the first steps in the right direction. ExpatInterviews.com will help you get the ideas and the motivation to finally turn your goal into reality, to start that restaurant you've always wanted in Melbourne, or to be that mountain guide in Thailand you always dreamed of being, for instance. Reading these stories will get you motivated and get the blood in your veins running again. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that is once more www.expatinterviews.com. I've never seen the site, I've never read it, but promises to be very interesting. Good luck. Well, just to give you some facts which I think you might want to remember, QE2, just like QE1, has ended up sitting in nothing more than cash on bank balance sheets. That's the nature of what's happened to the money of those ridiculous Federal Reserve experiments that hopefully are rapidly coming to an end with the demise of QE2. Let's hope that Ben Bernanke will come to an end and his silly little central bank will also see its own demise at some point in the near future. Did you know that investor sentiment on the stock market is almost as bullish now as it was in October 2007, right at the top, before a multi-year decline? Did you know that energy and food now absorb about 23% of U.S. wages and salaries? Quite often, obviously, a red flag for the American consumer. Demand destruction typically occurs at this very level. Real average weekly earnings are turning negative year over year despite the pickup in job creation. The U.S. economy could spin out 200,000 net new jobs per month ad infinitum, but it would still take nearly 5 years to get back to the pre-recession peak in the employment to population ratio. The economy has managed to recoup just 17% of recession job losses. Usually at this stage, heading into the third year of an expansion, the level of payrolls is at a new all-time high. The U.S. economy has slowed to around 2 to 2.5% growth in the first quarter from a near 4% increase in the fourth quarter, and the same place looks likely for the second quarter. And while all the pundits wax over how well the economy is doing, the reality is that only exports have clearly managed to go back to pre-recession levels. The economy is still digging itself out of a deep hole. Well, new home sales have collapsed at an 82% annual rate so far in 2011. That is correct, ladies and gentlemen. An 82% annual rate of collapse in new home sales. The unsold inventory of new homes has expanded from a 6.8-month supply in December 2010 to an 8.9-month currently. Both median and average prices for new homes have sagged at over a 60% annual rate. You can't make this stuff up. It's still taking over 8 months, the median, for home builders to close the deal on a new home. 60% longer than what you would see in a normal market. According to the U.S. Census data, there are now 3.7 million homes that are vacant and for sale. This is nearly 30% above normal. The problem of supply just won't go away. According to the National Association of Realtors, there are 3.5 million homes that are occupied but with a for sale sign on the front lawn, and this is 50% above normal. According to CoreLogic, which is courtesy of Chris Wood at CLSA, there are an estimated 1.8 million homes that are distressed, the inventory pipeline of homes in arrears or in the foreclosure pipeline. Well, this is obviously a crisis, and I don't see any end to it. especially in real estate. I don't see it. I see it, and I don't see it on the horizon. I don't see any way in which we can possibly deal with this situation, other than to ride it out as best we can. You can't fight it. You can't intervene. Nothing can be done. Well, I get an email from Michael Reidinger. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correct, Michael. Richard, if the U.S. government shuts down, how can we play it? Short bonds and treasuries, gold and silver ETF, short certain sectors. I would like to put some cash that is on the sidelines in for a quick boost. Thank you for your work, Mike R. Well, Mike, you can't play it. You absolutely can't, because you have no idea how long it's going to last. So even if you thought you could, the idea of taking a position in a market might mean that what if they came to an agreement 10 minutes later, Michael? Where would you be then? Your position would be heavily underwater. This is worse speculation than just going to Las Vegas and getting free drinks from a scantily clad maiden and, you know, taking your chances come what may. I suggest you do it that way, Michael. I think you'd have more fun and possibly an equal or greater chance of success. All right. Well, the Obama administration projects that the federal budget deficit will be approximately $1.6 trillion this year. Right now, the Republicans and the Democrats are fighting tooth and nail over the budget cuts. And the Republicans are proposing to cut the budget deficit by 3.8%, and the Democrats only want to cut it by 2.1%. The economy actually grew more between 1930 and 1940 than it did during the decade that recently ended. Over the last decade, the number of those without health insurance has risen from about 38 million to about 52 million. Agricultural commodities are soaring. The price of corn has more than doubled over the last 12 months. And considering the fact that corn is in thousands of food products, that is a very frightening statistic. Between 1999 and 2009, real median household income declined by 5%. It is being estimated that total government debt will grow by 42% by the year 2015. According to the Pentagon, the cost of the first week of U.S. attacks on Libya cost $600 million. The average person now spends approximately 23% of his or her income on food and gas. According to the Energy Department, the average household will spend approximately $700 more on gasoline in 2011 than it did during 2010. It is being projected that for the first time ever, the OPEC nations are going to bring in over $1 trillion from exporting oil this year. Their biggest customer, the United States. How nice. And by the way, we still don't know. The price of oil is still soaring. So any figures I give you, you could probably, you know, look way ahead of that. Well, the United States, according to the U.S., the Economic Policy Institute, almost 25% of households now have zero net worth or negative net worth. Back in 2007, that number was just 18.6%. China produced 19.8% of all the goods consumed in the world last year. The United States only produced 19.4%. The United States has lost an average of 50,000 manufacturing jobs per month since China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001. The U.S. trade deficit with China in 2010 was 27 times larger than it was back in 1990. Home values have fallen $6.3 trillion since the peak of the real estate market in 2005. According to RealtyTrack, one out of every 45 households was hit with a foreclosure filing in 2010. The number of homes that were actually repossessed reached the 1 million mark for the first time ever during 2010. New home sales set a brand new all-time record low in the month of February. Home sales are now down 82% from the peak in July 2005. The financial condition of families continues to deteriorate rapidly. In 2010, one out of every eight families had at least one family member that was unemployed. That number was the highest it has been since the Labor Department began keeping track of that statistic back in 1994. There are now more than 6 million people that the government says have given up looking for work completely. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the average length of unemployment is now an all-time record 39 weeks. People now owe more than $900 billion on student loans, which is also at an all-time record high. Average household debt has now reached a level of 136% of average household income. According to the Federal Reserve, between 2007 and 2009, median household net worth fell by 23%. The Fed also says that median household debt has risen to $75,600. According to a recent article posted on the website of the American Institute of Economic Research, the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar declined from $1 in 1913 to 4.6%, cents in 2009. Sadly, the Federal Reserve is working very hard to get rid of the little bit of purchasing power that the dollar does have left. Ladies and gentlemen, if we are not living in a depression right now, I would be very glad for a definition of what might constitute a depression, because in my book, this is depressionary statistics at work right around a neighborhood near you. I'm sorry. If this is what the wake-up call has to bring you as news, if this comes from no other source other than mine, so be it. But and by the way, if I'm branded a domestic terrorist, too bad. I live in Singapore. All right. Okay, so I get an email from Bill, who says, Richard, what do you think of Paul Ryan? That's Bill Adamo. Many Republicans have embraced his proposal to balance the budget, but it's absolutely, totally unrealistic. It will do no such thing. The proposal is now up to $6 trillion from $4 trillion in cuts. But $6 trillion over a decade is still nothing like enough. No credible proposal can ignore interest on the national debt, such as this does. There are 10 instances of the phrase excluding interest in the CBO reply. Now, to be fair, the alternative proposals excluded interest as well. But all that does is to make Ryan's proposal better than the alternatives. It doesn't make it any good. The idea that anyone can estimate out to 2040, as he does, is frankly preposterous. It's hard enough to figure out what will happen 3 years from now. How many recessions will there be by 2020? Does Ryan's plan take any recessions into account? Does the CBO's analysis? Forget 2040. To be remotely credible, any plan would need to balance the budget by 2020. By that measure, Ryan's plan fails right up front. The United States spends more on defense than the rest of the world combined. It has troops in 140 countries. Yet the simple fact of the matter is that the U.S. could no longer afford to be the world's policeman. Can it really be serious about tackling the deficit while doing nothing about defense spending? I think not, and Ryan, frankly, wimps out big time by failing to address it. A study just released by the Heritage Center for Data Analysis projects that the plan of Ryan will help create nearly 1 million new private sector jobs next year, bringing the unemployment rate down to 4% by 2015. Well, quite frankly, I have no idea what the normally sane Heritage Foundation is smoking at the moment, but without going into details, the idea that Ryan's path to prosperity will lower the unemployment rate by 4% by 2015 is pure nonsense. Ryan's proposal is no path to prosperity, as he calls it. It's a step in the right direction, but the best we can say about it, Bill, is that it delays bankrupting the nation. Republicans need to take another look at Ryan's assumptions on growth, on jobs, on interest, on the national debt, on military spending, on shared sacrifice, and on the idea that budget projections 30 years now from now make any sense. Ryan's plan may be better, far better than Obama's, but it is absolutely no path to prosperity. Well, I hope that answers your question, Bill. By the way, reformers like Ryan might want to watch out and take into account the experience of the Gracchi brothers in the year, or rather in the second century BC, which was, they tried the same kind of thing in 123 BC in a Rome not unlike the USA today. The elder brother Tiberius tried to reform the local real estate market. He got done in by a mob. His brother Gaius then tried to do the same thing, carrying on his brother's work, and also tried to reform the judiciary. And in 121 BC, he was set up by his enemies. He fled and committed suicide. 3,000 of his supporters were rounded up and killed. So anybody who's considering trying to get rid of the Fed, watch out. They're after you. Oh, by the way, of course, don't forget you're a domestic terrorist as well. Wretched people. Oh, never mind. Okay. I got a message from, well, Anonymous, who writes, in reference to the piece on Going Mexican, the Nassau County, recently taken over by New York State, has posted cancellation notices on essential bus routes. I depend on this public bus service to visit elderly relatives on Long Island, New York. My elderly relative depends on this public bus to do food shopping and essential errands. This is one of the wealthiest counties in the United States. Need I say more? By the way, the bus route in question goes past the house I grew up in, and it is occupied by what seems to be transient workers from Latin America. Most of the folks I ride the bus with are from Latin America. These are good, hard-working people, cleaning and taking care of the homes and families of some of the wealthiest people in New York. My relative's neighbor, who promoted the current administration, owns and runs a gas station that is listed on the Toxic Target website because of leaking 55-gallon drums and derelict autos stored behind the station. And he flees to the black MIA, missing in action flag. Need I say more? Anonymous. Well, you know, one of the other things that I'm afraid is inherent in my conjecture that leaving the United States is the thing to do is that as things get worse, the country is going to do exactly what this particular emailer has intimated, which is to cut down on the essential services of people who themselves may have had to give up their cars and other forms of transportation. There will be no social justice, no social attention paid to what is going on in the country. They will just make the cuts willy-nilly, and these will be people who drive to and from work. The big cities will become unlivable in consequence. The government, never having had any experience in dealing with the reduced circumstances of people because of economic hardship, they'll do all the wrong things, count on it. They'll make all the wrong decisions, and they will bring the domestic terrorist out in the best of us, quite frankly. This is what globalism is all about, you know, tearing down all the borders, gathering us all into one big, happy global family. Right now, too many of the good jobs are in America, and so millions of them have to be shipped out of the country. Also, millions of legal and illegal immigrants must be allowed into the U.S. so that they can compete for American jobs as well. That, of course, drives wages down, but in the end, the global community will benefit. Now you know what the World Trade Organization protests in Seattle in the 90s were all about. In the new global economy, the wealthy get to exploit slave labor on the other side of the world, thus wiping out the American middle class. And already we're seeing signs of an economic recovery with the ultra-rich leading the way. According to Moody's and Analytics, the wealthiest 5% of households in the United States now account for approximately 37% of all consumer spending. That's some change that Wall Street can believe in. For the rest of us, it's absolutely brutal right out there right now. People just want jobs that will enable them to pay their mortgages, put food on the table, provide a decent standard of living for their families. Unfortunately, those jobs are disappearing. They're being replaced by low-paying service jobs. And according to a recent report from the National Employment Law Project, higher wage industries accounted for 40% of the job loss over the past 12 months, but only 14% of the job growth. Lower wage industries accounted for just 23% of the job losses over the past 12 months and a whopping 49% of the job growth. So yes, it has become extremely difficult to find a job that pays a decent wage. In fact, half of all American workers now earn $505 or less per week. Could your family survive on $505 a week? Once again, ladies and gentlemen, let me be very clear about this. The politicians do not have any answers. Bill Clinton greatly accelerated the shipping of jobs overseas. George W. Bush was a complete and total disaster when it came to the economy. Barack Obama has been continuing most of the economic policies of those that came before him because he simply does not understand economics. Nothing else needs to be said. Well, I have an email from Susan who says, "Hi Richard, please do not read my last name on air if you answer this email. My elderly, 79-year-old father has his life savings in stock accounts. I've been trying for years to get him to get out of equities or at least convert 75% of his savings into something that is FDIC insured, but he believes that since he only buys stocks that pay dividends, he's not taking a risk. How would you respond to this? I've also urged him to listen to your shows and asked him if he can honestly see anything on the horizon that would change things around in the short or long term, to which he has no reply. I am really worried about his financial future. Love your show. Best regards, Susan." I've had this come up many times, Susan, and I can only tell you that when you're dealing with, especially with family members who will not see the light, I'm afraid the answer is you can do nothing. You can only feed him with more and more information and just beg him to take steps and to address the situation. Parents don't usually listen to their children in these matters. In broaching these matters with anybody is considered an insult, impinging on their economic lifestyle or their economic arrangements. It's just not done. In the States, it's much more commonly perceived to be a helpful and lively discussion, but still, in the end run, you're going to find that pretty much nobody's going to listen to you who are your older relatives. Susan, I'm sorry to be negative about this, but that's about it. Okay, well, I got another email from Lusik, who wants me to answer him by email, which I will do, Lusik. If you're listening to the show, I will get to you as soon as I possibly can. Well, ladies and gentlemen, sorry about the glitch at the beginning and of the show, and I hope that you will have a chance to listen to the archives if you missed any of the show or have not understood what was basically going on. I will be back with you again on Monday. It's been a pleasure, as always, talking to you. I hope that the message that I have for you is coming through. It is going to get much worse, so I don't in any way sugarcoat the truth, and I will not do so. And I hope that you will pay heed and take steps accordingly. So I hope you have all a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to talking to you on Monday. This is Richard Martin of the Wake Up Call wishing you all speed and a wonderful time for the next few hours till we meet again. Take care. Bye-bye.